the Subcommittee on Capital Construction and Bonding of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for Friday, June 22nd. Welcome, folks.
Yeah, he's on his way, madam.
Okay. I think we'll get started. People have been waiting a while already. House Bill 5006, Capital Construction, Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 5006 is the budget bill for the capital construction projects. It does not include projects for the Department of Higher Education or Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Those projects are included in Senate Bill 5516. Just as a definition, this establishes the authority for planning and design and construction of projects with costs over $500,000. Project approvals, appropriations, and expenditure limitations expire 6 years after being authorized. So these projects will expire on June 30th of 2013. I have attached a list of all of the projects, both narrative form and a list of amendments which correspond to those. The vast majority of these projects were reviewed by the subcommittees, and the recommendations are seen here all in one place. There are actually three recommendations, though, from the Legislative Fiscal Office that were not approved by the subcommittees. The Department of Administrative Services is requesting limitation increases for the Eugene State Office Building and the EETU Health Laboratory. Both of these issues arose after the agency's budget had been approved by the subcommittee. The Legislative Fiscal Office is also recommending that limitation established for the Department of Aviation Salem Office Building last biennium be eliminated. The project is not going to proceed, so the limitation is not needed. And finally, there was a budget note that was reported or recommended out of the Public Safety Subcommittee concerning the co-location of facilities in Junction City for the Department of Corrections and the Department of Human Services. The budget note is requesting that a report be done on some issues concerning the two facilities both being done at the same time down there. With that, Madam Co-Chair, if there's questions about specific projects, there are folks here who can answer those. And if you have questions about the amendments or anything like that, I'd be more than happy to answer those.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Discussion or questions? Senator Devlin, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm familiar with a lot of these projects that were in my own subcommittees, but I am very glad to see some of the projects that are not in my subcommittees, particularly in the Oregon Youth Authority facilities that I think are in very great need of some of these improvements.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Senator Nelson.
Yes, sir. This is the first time I've looked at this, and I'm kind of a novice at this. The thing that struck me is these building these parking lots and the red lots out there building more state buildings. And what I've understood from some of the interest groups is that there are lots of commercial space that is available within the Salem area. And just from my view, I'd like to, if the money was going to be spent in these things, I'd like to see it spent into maybe some other buildings other than building more buildings in the state mall.
Thank you, Senator. That's why you'll see the dollar limitation. It makes it open for discussion. We'll see what February 8 perhaps brings, and depending on the case made and space needs made, we'll be able to revisit that issue, sir.
Okay, thank you.
I think there are others who shared your concern, Senator.
Okay.
Further discussion or other questions? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I as well have... Actually, I have some reservation about the two central mall office buildings that don't have any further description in terms of who fits into that space and so forth. And as Senator Nelson mentioned, there are a number of projects here that I've seen in subcommittees related to military department, youth authority, and others that I am thrilled to see as part of this project. I do want to say that with some of these buildings that don't really have a plan as of yet, that while I might vote to move this particular bill forward, I don't want that vote to be seen as one that would believe that I'm voting to approve the planning for or construction of those buildings, that we would hope to see this process happen again to approve those structures.
Very good point, Representative. Very good. Okay, further discussion?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the budget recommendations that LFO's set before us.
Thank you. Senator Schrader moves the LFO recommendations. Discussion on that motion? Are there any objections to that motion? Seeing none, so ordered.
I'd like to move the budget note, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Schrader moves the budget note. Is there discussion on that motion? Any objections? Seeing none?
I'm sorry.
Discussion. Take your time.
Yeah, this is a long list, and this page was detached. Does this go with the group?
Darren?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, one page was detached from the list of the capital construction work. As it relates to the Capitol Wings remodel, do we know what model of financing or funding is being used in that process?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Hannah, yes, that will be COPs.
Is that COPs for the entire amount?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Hannah, yes.
Mr. Hill, that's for the entire amount in this bill. Are there other costs related to that project that are being funded otherwise?
Madam Chair, that I'm not sure about. I think there are some costs dealing with some moving and some other issues that would not qualify for COP, so they would need to be funded with the general fund.
For this one, yeah.
Just as a point of discussion, I've been through this discussion some before. Again, this is a project, as you work in this building, as you use the building, and you see some of the deteriorating infrastructure, you recognize the need for improvement in the building. It would have been my hope, and still would be, if it was just my magic wand to wave, that a significant part of this would be cash funded, especially the durable pieces that make up the remodel of the building. In my opinion, bonding things beyond their useful life is not the most conservative fiscal method to use, and I wish we were putting a significant cash contribution into this project for those things that are durable, i.e. the furnitures and carpets and things that will not outlast the length of the bond.
Thank you, Representative. We can make sure you get very specific information about all the pieces of that project. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 5006.
Wait. No further discussion. Any objections? Seeing none. Senator Schrader.
I'd like to move House Bill 5006 to the floor with the due pass as amended recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Schrader moves House Bill 5006 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Any more discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Thank you.
Mr. Hill,
we need some carriers.
Carriers. Representative Jensen will carry it to the full.
It should be someone from this committee.
I think he has shepherded it pretty well. He knows this project pretty well. He chaired the subcommittee on general government that actually looked at it in much more detail. Let's list him for the floor as well. I may change that. And on your side, Senator Nelson, thank you. Thank you. House Bill 5046 Tobacco Settlement Funds Account. Wilson, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee. Before you is House Bill 5046. This is a distribution bill of the proceeds of the Bastrr Settlement Agreement between major tobacco companies and a number of states. The revenue stream comes into the state and deposited in the Tobacco Settlement Funds Account and then distributed by this bill. It is currently distributed in three ways as proposed for 07-09. $112.6 million is the Department of Administrative Services for the ordinary appropriation bonds, which are used back, I believe, in the 0103 biennium to solve a relatively significant financial situation. Almost $32 million is allocated to pay off the Oregon Opportunity Bonds at Oregon Health and Science University Bond Fund. I believe those are dealing with biotech-related projects. And finally, the third use, which you do not see in the amendment on the second page of your handout, because House Bill 2143, which passed out of full a couple days ago, took care of that. And these are monies that go to the Department of Justice for the enforcement of ORS 18400-455, dealing with the requirements of the Master Settlement Agreement, dealing with the non-participating manufacturing requirements of that Master Settlement Agreement. So, Madam Chair, that is my summary of the bill and the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Is there any discussion? Questions?
Madam Chair, I'd like
Senator Schrader?
Yes, I'd like to move House Bill 50046 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Senator Schrader moves House Bill 5046 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections? So ordered. Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Senate Bill 5506. Criminal fine and assessment account. Oh, Mr. Wilson again.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Excuse me for
that's okay.
Madam Co-Chair, I would direct your attention to the second page of the handout, a table that shows the allocation of criminal fines and assessment revenues. These are revenues collected from the various court fees, violations, and other revenue sources, and then they are distributed to statutorily set four priorities dealing with police and law enforcement training, various crime victims programs, the forensic services and medical examiners, and the law enforcement data system LEDS program. The Ways and Means process through their appropriate budget bills set the expenditure limitations, which are in the far right-hand corner or far right-hand column, and the allocations to meet those limitations are in the middle column of numbers. The Public Safety Subcommittee and the Full Ways and Means Committee determined in the Oregon State Police budget that it was better to use general fund instead of CFA funds for the training, forensics, medical examiner, and the LEDS system. Again, if you take a look at the amounts there and the allocation, they meet the limitation except for DPSST operations and the CAMI program, where the additional funding was put in place to make sure there was sufficient funding for any wage increases that might come out of settlements of labor representation contracts, as well as to ensure sufficient working capital in those accounts. Madam Co-Chair, that is a summary of my my presentation, except to say that whatever is not allocated out of the CFA revenues is deposited in the general fund and has been taken into account in terms of all your resource numbers you've been working with.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Any discussion? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Doug, this is going to seem elementary, I imagine, but I've never seen this particular allocation form. So if I went back and brought out my DOJ budget or DPSST budget, those numbers that we budgeted within those would match up to these, and we're just matching the allocation to the expenditure limitation?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Hanna, that is correct, except in two cases which I just described regarding working capital necessity and sufficient amount to pay for any wage and compensation increases during the biennium in DPSST operations and a little bit in the CAMU, and that's why you see a little bit of difference.
Just one follow-up.
Sure.
Thank you. So the State Police General Fund amount that you mentioned, the total allocation, the just over $1 million, that's all general fund? And that was the piece where we eliminated the criminal fines and assessment funding?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Hanna, that's right, for state police funding as well as the ones at the bottom of the list, forensics, medical examiner.
Yeah, that was all within forensics and medical examiner. It was all within OSP.
Right.
Thank you.
Good questions, Representative Hanna. Senator Schrader.
Just by way of explanation for the committee, the priorities you see listed here are not something dreamed up by the co-chairs or any particular individual. These arose out of a concerted discussion over the last several biennia, and indeed legislation was passed about 4 years ago, as I recollect. That wanted to actually get at some sense of, you know, what the best use of CFAA money should be. Over the years I've been here, early years I was here, became kind of a fund that different members went to for particular projects of their own liking, and it seemed like there would be a concerted policy about what was most important, what was the next most important, and what were, you know, on down the line here. So in the statutory legislation, there are four priority levels listed, and the goal ideally is to encourage the legislature to fund things in somewhat priority order. That same statute also encourages the judicial and municipal courts to actually collect the fines. There was a concern several years ago that although these fines are mandated by law, they seem to have difficulty in getting the judicial and municipal courts to actually collect them. And it seemed appropriate that those that are perpetrating crimes, if they have the financial wherewithal, should help pay restitution for some of the victims of those crimes. And therein lies the genesis for the statute and the allocations that you see before you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to bring up another issue just by way of background, sensitive issue, but in 2003 there was a recommendation by the executive branch to put these into general funds so that they could be entirely discretionary, and I think to a person on Ways and Means, people opposed that because they wanted to keep the clear connection between the source of the funds and particularly victims of crime.
Thank you. Good point. Nice recollection of the history. Anybody else? Further discussion?
Co-chair.
Senator Schrader.
I move Senate Bill 5506 to the full committee with the due-pass recommendation as amended.
Do we have an amendment?
Here's an amendment. There's the third page of your handout.
Can you move the amendment first, please?
I apologize, Madam Co-Chair.
Senator Schrader moves the Dash 2 amendment into Senate Bill 5506. Any discussion on the motion?
The amendment is just the fiscal piece, correct?
That is right, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, Representative Hanna.
Any objections?
Move the bill as amended.
Thank you. Senator Schrader moves Senate Bill 5506 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Carriers. Senator Devlin. Senator Nelson, would you like to carry it to full and to your floor?
Sure.
Okay, thanks. And I think I will ask Senator Shields to carry it to the House floor. Representative Shields. Did you want it?
I had
Representative
Sub.
Representative Hanna, carry it to the House floor.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, I did not hear the carriers on the previous bill, 5046, the Tobacco Settlement Funds account.
I think you didn't hear them because we didn't assign them. Can you carry that one to the full?
I can.
Representative Hanna will carry it to the full. Senator Nelson will carry it to the Senate floor.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Do you want it for the House floor? Or
sure.
Okay, and Representative Hanna will carry it on the House floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay. There may be a little interest in this next bill. Senate Bill 5516. The Department of Higher Education and Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development Capital Construction. Welcome, Mr. Bender. Are you going to read that entire binder to us tonight?
I believe not.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 5516 is the capital construction bill for the Oregon University System and for community college capital construction projects. It is a separate bill from the bill that you've just voted out for all other capital construction in the state. We do not have any amendments available for you yet. We do, though, have conceptual amendments that we would ask you to consider. The reason we don't have amendments yet is, as you can see from the bill, it's a very complex bill. There's a lot of things that we need to make sure are correct, or else these projects may not be able to proceed forward as possible, as envisioned. The reason why the capital construction bill is so complex for post-secondary education is that the people of Oregon have authorized for your consideration a number of financing instruments for capital construction for higher ed and community colleges that are not available for any other purpose. And when we use these different authorities that the people have provided you, you will see that this makes it more complex. But what I would ask you to do is to please look at the handout that I've provided. It is a four-page handout, and this contains the conceptual amendments and the recommendation on this budget. A number of you I know have been working extremely hard on this budget for a long time. When the budget was presented to you in the form of Senate Bill 5516, there was concern about the proposals and their costs to the state. At the time that this was introduced, LFO estimated that the cost of financing these programs on the state budget would be $71 million per biennium, each biennium from the beginning in the 2009-11 biennium. And I know that a lot of people have been working very hard to try to bring about a recommendation of capital construction projects that meet the highest needs of the state, but that are also within a cost that is more affordable and affordable that we can do. So as a result of those discussions, I would like to show you, ask you to look at the front page here of this document. This is the recommended capital construction projects for the Department of Higher Education. We will see the recommendations for the community colleges later on a separate page. The recommendation includes 38 capital construction projects, specified capital construction projects, plus an item which is actually the second row from the bottom, which is labeled Capital Renewal Code and Safety. These are funds that would be provided and distributed to the seven OUS campuses to meet ongoing needs of addressing smaller deferred maintenance issues and dealing with repair and renewal of their capital facilities. This represents the total of the recommendation. I would just like to very briefly talk about the different fund sources here that we are talking about before going on to the second page of this handout. The second page of this handout will focus on 18 of these 39 projects that you see here. So less than half of them we'll be focusing on later. But before we narrow that down, I just wanted to explain to you what these are in case you have any questions. The various fund sources for higher ed capital construction are listed in the columns there. And if you count them up, we have seven different fund sources to finance capital construction projects. There are a number of these capital construction, these financing sources, though, that are quite different from the others in terms of the state budget. And those are the ones that are labeled Article 11 F1 bonds, which is the third column from the left, and certificates of participation, which is the third column from the right. The characteristics of both of these funding sources that make them different from the other ones on this table are that the debt service, all of these are, those, both of those columns are debt instruments. The debt service on both of them are paid from campus revenues. In the case of Article 11 F1 bonds, these are for projects that are self-liquidating, and the revenues, we can go to any project here and basically talk about where the revenues are coming from, but the revenues will typically be fees for housing and dining services, for parking facilities, for athletic facilities, or fees that are supported by the student building fee. For certificates of participation, the funding is also, debt service is also paid by the campuses from their budgets. These projects do not have to be self-liquidating. Certificates of participation are available for other state agency capital construction projects. Article 11 F1 bonds are limited to higher ed. They are not even available for community colleges. But what we note is that if you look at the total of roughly $160 million in Article 11 F1 bonds, plus another $11 million in certificates of participation, the debt service on these, which will occur in the future, will not impose a direct cost on either the state general fund or the lottery fund. The other columns will. The other columns are, first of all, general fund, which imposes a general fund cost on the current budget because you are financing this with general fund. Article 11 G bonds, which are the debt service on which are paid from the general fund, so they impose a general fund, cost to the general fund in the future, and lottery bonds, which for which the debt service is paid for from lottery funds. The other item there, the only column I think, well, there are two columns we haven't discussed yet. Another is energy loans. Energy loans are Article 11 J. General obligation bonds that are issued by the Department of Energy for specific projects which include an energy-saving component. The projects that you see here financed by energy loans, the debt service on these projects will be paid by higher ed, but from a combination of sources. The combination of sources is some of this debt service will be paid by the campuses themselves. The portion that will be paid by the campuses represents the portion of energy savings that they are projected to realize as a result of the investments that they are making. However, typically those energy savings will not cover the full cost of the debt on these bonds. The difference will be paid by the state general fund. So this is a split between the campuses and the state. And finally, the last column is other revenues. This represents cash that the campuses raise directly for the projects. This does not result in any debt service to either the state or to the campuses. It typically is in the form of donations and gifts. In some cases, there can be some funds received through other arrangements. If there are no questions about this overall financing, what I'd like to ask you to do is to look at the second page.
Mr. Bender, can you wait a minute? Sure. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. First of all, I don't know if the audience has this, but this thing's tiny. And it's
and it's I can see it perfectly represented.
Well, I got good glasses on, but you got to have a straight edge.
Help.
That is good if you'll hold it. Should make some fun of everybody with glasses. So it is small, and it is the first time we've seen it. So, Mr. Bender, you're doing a great job of explaining this, but could you give an example, just, you know, campus paid or fee revenue on a project?
Yes.
Well, for instance, let's look at the $5 million of certificates of participation on building rewiring at OSU. It's, I don't know, 8 or 10 down the column.
Yes.
It's paid with COPs. How does that building or how does the campus repay a COP on that?
Representative Hanna, the way that the campus will repay the debt service for this, the debt on the $5 million, will be from its revenues from other sources other than the state. This would include, depending upon where, which facilities are being rewired, this could include tuition and fee revenues that students are paying. It could include, if it is an auxiliary, it could include, for example, residence hall fees. That is where the institutions will repay the debt certificates of participation. If we look at a project that is fully funded by Article 11F1 bonds, I would refer to the third from the bottom. It's kind of easy to see because it's close to the end. A new student residence at Western Oregon University. This would be, if you approve this, you would be approved the use of $11.25 million of Article 11F1 bonds. The debt service on the bonds would be paid from revenues that are received from renting out the student residence once it is completed. Okay, one follow-up.
Thank you. Again, appreciate the description because it's helping us to see how these things are handled. The second from the bottom, and you mentioned this line item, capital renewal code and safety, total of $83.1 million. What dollar size are the deferred maintenance projects that are being funded there?
These will typically be projects that each individual project would be, certainly less than $500,000 in total cost. The types of projects we're talking about might be, for example, replacement of an HVAC system that has failed, replacement of plumbing systems that are failing or in danger of failing, fixing of a roof. What these do not include, and we'll talk about this in more depth in the second page, are major projects designed to bring an entire facility up to a higher level of usage and to address maintenance issues throughout an entire facility. These would be used by campuses to address literally, to help address literally what is estimated to be hundreds of millions of dollars of cost to them to bring systems back into line.
Thank you. I appreciate that description.
Okay. Thanks. Any other questions before we move on?
Question?
Senator Schrader.
On the use of lottery bonds, what's been the history of lottery bonds in higher education over the last decade or
two? Mr. Co-Chair, lottery bonds have only recently been used at all for higher education capital construction. As I mentioned at the beginning in the introduction, the people of Oregon have provided other authorities for the state for higher education capital construction projects that aren't available anywhere else, and the state has used those since they've been approved. The two primary sources are for auxiliary projects that are self-supporting, the Article 11F1 bonds. For the academic facilities, such as classrooms, offices, laboratories, etc., where the Constitution allows Article 11G bonds to be issued. Article 11G bonds, though, have a constitutional requirement that every dollar of bond must be matched by an equal dollar of general fund. That is a constitution that that is a restriction that the people of Oregon have placed on your issuance of these bonds. Traditionally and in the past, when the state, prior to Measure 5, the state very often provided the general fund match. So, for example, a $10 million project could be funded half with bonds and half with general fund. Since Measure 5, or perhaps even before that, as the general fund became much tighter in the state budget, the state hasn't been able to typically provide the general fund match. And in lieu of that, campuses have been raising from donations the 50%, which is then, for legal reasons, and that's part of the reason this bill is so fat, for legal reasons, those donations are then put into the general fund and made a part of the general fund and then used as the required general fund match. Now, the issue with Article 11G bonds, though, is that they do require a match, lottery bonds do not have any constitutionally required match. So a $10 million project could theoretically be funded entirely from lottery bonds. And the state did not do that until fairly recently, when lottery bonds have started to be used in some projects where it was difficult for the institutions to get donations for their half of the match, for their part of the match, and the state did not have the general fund to provide it directly. These, specifically last session, lottery bonds were used to a large extent for deferred maintenance projects because campuses have reported that it's difficult for them to get donors to provide donations for deferred maintenance as opposed to a, excuse the term, but like a fancy or nice new facility that is much more attractive for donors. Indeed, when Senate Bill 5516 was introduced to you, and you can even look at it here on page 2 and 3, you'll see there was many lottery bonds, or a large number of lottery bonds, a total, in fact, of about $175 million in lottery bonds that were proposed for use for these projects. I know, Mr. Co-Chair, that you were one of the people working very hard to see if these projects could be funded without that reliance on lottery bonds. And in this proposal that you've worked out, that amount has been reduced to the one item, the $50 million, which is for capital renewal. These are the projects like repairing, you know, heating systems, where this, under your, this proposed budget, campuses would not be expected to try to get donations to match state bonds for that purpose. Instead, this proposal provides lottery bonds to provide the full 100% coverage of those costs.
Okay. Good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson?
That struck a question there. On the first two items, the one at ELU in Mill Hall, so the general fund is the match for the Article 11.
In this case, yes.
And then the next one is the LIT. There's Article 11 is $5.5 million. But then the match is coming out of revenues, which is presumably from the community.
Yes, and that's actually an excellent segue to the second page here, if there aren't any other questions.
I mean, on that 14.5, so that technically they could have, I mean, you could have put $14.5 million in there, and then you would have had a match for match, dollar for dollar. Is there any requirements you have to do that, or is there any requirements you have to do that? And we say the community raises that amount of money.
There's no requirement. There is the option to provide a direct general fund match for any Article 11G bond, and as you'll see, there are a number of projects for which that is being proposed and some that are not, for which it's not being proposed. There is this proposal has a rationale, though, for distinguishing between those two situations. And if you look at page 2, this focuses in on the 18 projects out of the 39 that have some component of financing that will incur or will result in costs to the state general fund and lottery fund budget, either currently or in the future. Another way of saying this is the things that you don't see on the second page that were on the first page, the ones that aren't here, are going to be entirely financed by donations, COPs, the F bonds, or some combination of the three. So these are the ones that are left.
Okay, let's move into that one then.
Okay. There are fundamentally three types of projects on this list. The first type of project is the one that we've discussed in some detail, which in this particular list, I apologize for being in a slightly different order, is right in the middle. It's again that $50 million lottery bonds for the capital repair. I believe we did discuss that, and if there are no questions, I'll go on. The next set of projects are new projects, new facilities. And as is typically the case, new facilities would require campuses to raise donations for those facilities. The ones that are of that nature are the ones that you see in the left-hand column where it says required match. All of those are, in essence, a new facility or a very significant reconfiguration of an existing facility into an entirely different use. These are the matches that would be required to be from the institutions to match the Article 11G bonds. I do note that last session, the legislature approved in a budget note a requirement that the Department of Higher Education campuses not seek donations for projects that would have Article 11G bond match until after you approve the Article 11G bond matches. That is now in effect for ongoing biennia, and that would continue to remain in effect under this recommendation. The second set of projects in this list are those that are for deferred maintenance. That is to say, these are not new buildings, but these are to address buildings with very significant issues of disrepair. You can see these after each name. You'll see them, the term DM/seismic. DM stands for deferred maintenance. Seismic stands for the fact that on most of these projects, seismic issues are also being addressed simultaneously with the maintenance to make the structures safer in the event of an earthquake event. In all of these situations, I believe all of these deferred maintenance situations, what you will notice is that this budget actually provides direct general fund to match the Article 11G bonds, so there is no requirement for the institutions to go out and raise funds for them.
Thank you for that. Questions? Discussion? Okay.
If there are no further questions about Department of Higher Education, I would just like to mention that the original plan would have had a $57 million roll-up cost in funding next biennium. And as you can see, this has been reduced somewhat from a reduction in projects, but also more so from refinancing how these projects would be funded. The roll-up next biennium, the debt service is estimated at $34.6 million. All of the debt service numbers here are purely estimates. They do not go in the bill, and they may change. The numbers in the recommended budget level are not estimates. Those are actual numbers that will go in the bill. So the reduction, there's been a significant reduction in roll-up costs because of the work that you've done on this.
Okay. Let's get the explanation on community college, and then we can go back and discuss the whole package and perhaps hear from.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 3 is the recommendation for community college capital construction projects. This looks much simpler than the higher ed table for a very good reason. Legally, these projects are not state property once they are constructed. They belong to the community colleges, and therefore, funding that you provide does not indicate how much the projects are going to cost. They just indicate how much the state is going to provide the community college in support of those costs. What you see here is a list of 8 community college capital construction projects and Article 11G bonds that would be provided to support them. The total Article 11G bond issuance would be slightly more than $40 million, with estimated debt service costs beginning next biennium of about $6.5 million roughly per biennium. The other revenues columns are numbers that you see that will be in the bill. They in all cases exactly match the G bond amount, and these represent community college funds that the community colleges must raise and transfer to the state in order to provide the constitutional match so that the G bonds can be provided. So technically, if you look at the last item there, Oregon Coast, what the $3 million means is that Oregon Coast has to raise $3 million, send it to the state, we will issue $3 million in bonds and send them $6 million back. So they'll have their $3 million back and $3 million of state support on top of that. These projects were chosen for represent only funds for colleges primarily that have not received funding last biennium. And Also, they primarily reflect a standard and uniform level of support per gross square footage of the proposed projects.
Can you explain a little bit about the work that the President's Association does and the significance of $7.5 million?
Certainly, Madam Co-Chair. The President's Association does present to the State Board of Higher Education a prioritization of community college capital construction projects. Many of these projects are quite large in total cost, but they have agreed to, generally with very few exceptions, not request more than $7.5 million in state Article 11 G bond support, even if the project is more than $15 million in total. For a project that has less than $15 million in total, they request half of that amount in Article 11 G bonds. The project, this particular recommendation, started from that request, and therefore you will not see any projects that are greater than $7.5 million in this list. Some of these other ones were initially also at $7.5 million, but again, these particular funding levels represent a uniform level of support for based on a square footage basis. So where these were reduced, the cost per square foot had been higher, and this brings them in line equal for the all of the projects.
That's helpful so that people understand some of the rationale. Discussion. Senator Devlin, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I know since last biennium we have struggled with what our role is in terms of community colleges, and I think we've actually set some fairly good parameters here. I think if anyone looks at this, they will see that last time we funded about $38 million, this time we're funding $40 million. There is only one repeat project on this list, and that is Oregon Coast, and they got $4.5 million last time. There are only three community colleges now that have not received.
Which added to $3 million makes?
$7.5 million.
Bingo.
And there's actually only one college, actually, that has ever received more than $7.5 million, and that's Klamath at $7.7 million. And that leaves three community colleges that have not yet received any funding. I think that this sets some pretty good parameters, and I think also with a clear understanding that we face some very difficult challenges in that in our big three, I hate to call them the big three, I always call them the big three, PSU, OSU, U of O, we have major needs, and in all of our regionals we have extremely major needs, and none of those have the ability to go out to the ballot box and ask for a match. So they have to come to us. So I think that this is setting sort of good parameters for this, and I'm hoping that we develop this relationship with presidents so that we can follow this in the future and understand that the state has some limitations on how much funding it can provide for capital at the community college level.
Excellent. Thank you, Senator. Representative Galizio.
I agree with what Senator says, and also, though, I think this body rightly has put a great deal of responsibility on to community colleges in terms of training and educating people, and whether it's workforce training and or providing the first 2 years for transfer. So trying to build capacity, I do think it is our role to indeed invest in this infrastructure, and we should certainly continue to do so. It is very difficult for a lot of these local communities to raise the money necessary. So I'm glad we're stepping up again.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Just a couple of words. Somebody delivered this statute to me on the capital construction policy. The state should maintain a policy of substantial state participation in community college building costs, et cetera, et cetera. And it sounds like, from what Senator Devlin said, we're looking at substantial, meaning somewhere around $40 million. And I guess that leads me to my next question is, I mean, what is the legislative approach in determining this? I've got a couple of community colleges east of the Cascades that are on the list someplace, and I'm just trying to figure out, this session, they're going to have to come back in the next session, what are the standards or the parameters or approach that the
legislature will come to at that point.
Senator Schrader,
take a stab at that. That's a very, very good question, and heretofore, both within the university system and the community college system, it has been difficult to settle on a particular approach and rationale. And so over the last few years, as two biennia in particular, when the community colleges have come to the legislature for matching needs, much as has been discussed here, we struggle trying to come up with a very good rationale for, you know, why some get this and the other. My impression, having served in this body for a little while, is what we're trying to do is reach out and help our community partners. We're trying to put some fiscal limitations on that the Chair and Senator Devlin talked about with the total dollar amount. And some of that's just to make sure we have the opportunity with limited funds to get to a number of the colleges. It's looking to me that, at least at this point, it looks like there's a three-biennial rotation evolving here. And I would assume that those colleges that are not seen on the list, haven't gotten any money yet, would be first in line, I would hope, next time. We have relied on the community college system as it currently exists to come forward with recommendations. The ones you see in front of you are pretty much priority order as presented to us by the presidents of the community colleges, and we try to adhere to that. I think we're going to this efficient use, those colleges that come up with good square footage at the best cost, trying to take that as a perhaps not a given or an absolute, but maybe a target for which other community colleges could shoot for, realizing that, hey, depending on where you live, it's sometimes more costly to build. That's just the real world. I think one thing I'd like to have happen, and I've chatted with my fellow co-chair on this, and the Senate Revenue Chair, because apparently there are other states that have a more coordinated approach, and it'd be good, I think, work for an interim education committee or Ways and Means Committee to work with community colleges and university system and get into a real thoughtful, sustainable, not just legislative, perhaps picking certified smart people outside the body, including, of course, members of the four-year and community college system, and come up with a rationale that maybe we could start to build into our system. But that's what we're doing now and maybe where we hope to go over the next few years, sir.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I mean, what I gather from talking to some of the folks is nobody's really quite sure of how these things come about and if there was some sort of structure so they knew how to do it. But I appreciate the answer, and thank you.
The co-chair and I have extended to the governor's office and the leaders of both the university system and through the governor's office, the community college system, that we would like to work on establishing sound, sustainable policy on that as we work through the interim. And so some of you may have an opportunity to join us in that. Mr. Pernsteiner, I'd like to ask you to come and talk to us a bit about the university system.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nolan, members of the committee. For the record, my name is George Pernsteiner. I'm the Chancellor of the University System, and I think I'm losing my voice, so you may be spared the 50-minute lecture that you might have expected. I want to thank you for this opportunity to be with you, and also thank you for the proposed capital construction budget for the Department of Higher Education. This is an important capital budget for us, for the state, for the students, for economic development, for a whole variety of reasons, both for deferred maintenance and for some important new construction. I know that this budget was reached after great thought and some intense discussions and negotiations. And I want to express my thanks to the co-chairs for their thoughtful consideration of this, to the members for all the work that they've done on this, and I especially want to thank the co-chairs for a late restoration of some funds for the Oregon Institute of Technology's Health Professions Program. That restoration of funds and the invitation that was sent in a letter to the governor to come back and discuss that project in the special session are very important because they will allow us to continue the construction of Phase 2 and not have to demobilize at the end of Phase 1. That's very important for saving money. It's very important for maintaining momentum. It's very important for us as we continue our fundraising for the project. And I'm hopeful that when we come back together with you in February, we will together figure out a way to ensure that that project is fully funded for all of its construction and its equipment. And I really want to express my appreciation for what you've done on that and for the whole capital construction budget. It's a good budget, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Co-chair. I want to express my appreciation, too, that a number of the issues that were lingering over the last few days have been resolved in terms of OIT being able to remain on schedule, in terms of us keeping our commitment in terms of the former DPSSST building, and also in terms of an opportunity that probably won't come around again in terms of the PCAT building. One of the things that I've seen in reviewing capital over a long period of time, and we had an earlier discussion here today in one of our bills about seismic needs for K through 12, and I was not surprised by that result. I think I already knew it in advance that about 50% of our buildings are in trouble. I would say that the number probably isn't much better for the buildings in our university system. I think every member here, I know that the co-chairs have seen your plan out to 2025, showing what the needs are. And I think they present some real challenges to the state, and I can understand clearly why the co-chairs have expressed a little bit of caution in trying to approach this, because it is a major need, and the state does have some clear limitations on debt, and has some clear limitations in terms of our operating revenue. We're not 45th and 46th for nothing in most places. But I do think we're making some really good headway here, and I'm hoping that this will continue. I think we did very well in 2005, and I think we're going to do very well in 2007, and hopefully that will continue.
Senator Nelson?
Yes, thank you. And for George, when you go out and raise this money in the communities, this is the real stuff. I see the required match on this page two, this says there's $107 million of required match, and on page one it shows about $157 million of other revenues, and that's, we're all related somewhere. But when you're in universities or go out and do some fundraising, I mean, what do you tell the people? How do you raise this money? What are the expectations? And do you have some concerns with what the state does in response to those?
Coach Nolan, Senator Nelson. When we go to raise funds from private donors for new construction, we talk about the fact that in the past the state has been able and willing to participate in the funding of the facilities, often to the tune of dollar for dollar, as Mr. Bender had noted earlier. And that has proven to be a very effective tool in fundraising. And you can see by the amount of required match that's in the column there that we've been very successful in that fundraising. We will, of course, as Mr. Bender noted, be back to you probably early next year to talk about what we'd like to raise in 09-11. And that's part of the ongoing process. But we hope that the state will continue to match the donations that people make, because that really is an incentive for them to make them, because they know that they're leveraging their own dollars in order to achieve something that they think is important for the university and for the state. And the ability of the state to participate with that has meant a very great deal in being able to raise those monies.
Okay. Senator Schrader.
Follow up on that. And that leads to part of the question that needs to be answered, hopefully over the next interim, about if they raise it, will we come? Mm-hmm. Where just because they raise the money for a particular building, does that mean the state is obligated to match it? What is going to be the expectation of the universities and community colleges back home? And for the most part, I would say probably, yeah, you know, they're all good projects, but maybe it's not exactly a priority. And I think the juxtaposition between the strategic plan of the university system and the community college system, with opportunities that all of a sudden present themselves, that they may have been further down the list, but boom, a big donor gives a lot of... This is the type of stuff that we have to struggle with, and hopefully, again, we'll have a system that will make sense, we'll all buy into and feel good about. I'd like to make a few comments, Madam Chair.
Please.
If I may.
A few.
Appreciate the lateness of the hour, but this has been a labor over the last two biennia, I think, to establish some clearer direction. I'll point to four things in the university system budget, I think, that highlight a direction, or at least some dialogue we hope to have with the executive branch over the next couple of years to get us all on maybe a same page. One is the amount of indebtedness that the state's liable to incur here. This is by far the biggest capital investment in our university and community college system ever in the state of Oregon's history. And the question the co-chairs posed early in April when they presented the co-chairs budget, when the governor had a slightly higher, significantly higher number, was, what is the sustainable trajectory here? And laudable, what is the sustainable trajectory? And so the hints, as Mr. Bender pointed out, we try to ratchet back our debt service, and I'm not sure we're at the perfect sustainable level yet. That's a discussion that has yet, I think, to come, but it needs to be addressed. We also barely fit under the lottery bond cap. So that's another item. You see, why did we take all the lottery bond stuff out? Well, from my experience as a legislator in this bill, that's a fairly new mechanism to use for university funding. It's not been the history. It's been Article 11G bonds or general fund. And since economic development has taken a pretty high priority in our state under the new governor here the last 6 years, we've been doing some good lottery bonding for economic development. With that in mind, at the capital budget you all approved just an hour or so ago, we are right at that debt management advisory lottery bond expectation that keeps us solvent, if you will. And we can only do that by moving the university system off lottery bonds. I think it's a good, we do not want, in my opinion, this is my opinion, to get the university system addicted to lottery bonds. I think we need to find other mechanisms. The third point I guess I'd like to make is that in the deferred maintenance area, that $50 million is a record level. That's twice what we've been doing, or at least over the last five, six, by the day I've been here. We have really made an investment in the $600+ million deferred maintenance needs of the university system. They're huge. This certainly isn't going to get us all of where we need to be, but it's going to get us a long ways down the line. And hopefully, again, as we evolve over the next 2 years, we'll have a better policy, maybe be able to do more, and preferably not lottery bonds, preferably some other source. The last point I guess I'd make is developing a policy around matching. As Mr. Bender has pointed out and the Chancellor has indicated, hey, that dollar-for-dollar match is pretty nice incentive for donors. I mean, it's pretty nice to know that, hey, if I put some money in, my money's going to be matched dollar-for-dollar for whatever building we're having. We have four really great great research projects here on this list are going to attract not only big bucks into the system, but big research grants into the system, which are going to put Oregon schools on the map and also help pay for some of the operations within those systems. I think this is a wonderful opportunity. There are some other deferred maintenance projects that the co-chairs had originally proposed at least a 10% match from the university systems, which is an even better deal. That's $1 donation buys you $9. And that's about the best match we have in state government. We do some of the airports get that from the federal government. That's a huge match. And I'd respectfully suggest that it'd be good to have a dialogue with our university partners over the next, year and a half, 2 years to say, well, we could probably make these dollars go even further, these limited general fund dollars. If you can step up with at least a 10, 15, pick a number, 20% match in your local community. Certainly it's harder for our regional partners. Maybe that's part of the discussion. A little easier for some of the more urban partners, if you will. But I think, frankly, that the people of the state of Oregon, much like with our shared responsibility model, respond well to people that help themselves. I'm more willing to help people that help themselves a little bit, and that's a dialogue I'd like to see continue. So with that, Madam Chair, I think this is a pretty great budget. I'm very proud of the work that the committee has done and all the people on this committee put effort in, and the university and community college partners for putting up with us over the last 6 months.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
Briefly?
Yes, Representative Hanna. Yes,
thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I cannot find disagreement with any of Senator Schrader's comments. I appreciate them greatly. Inasmuch as the deferred maintenance piece, I spent a great deal of time within the Oregon correctional system looking through deferred maintenance projects, within Oregon Youth Authority, again looking at deferred maintenance projects. I look at this education piece and see a number of new construction pieces here. If there's one continuing line that I'd like to keep saying and hope as we go through the planning that Senator Schrader mentioned, that is, as we look to build new facilities, as we look at the funding for capital construction for new facilities, that we go the step beyond or two, and that is to plan for capital
reconstruction or capital replacement budget funding, much like you would find in commercial buildings where you're planning ahead and setting capital aside to replace things like carpeting and those kind of things. And I would really hope, as we have the discussions that Senator Schrader mentioned, that we would look towards capital replacement funding as we move forward, that we could get with our partners and say, this is a beautiful new structure you have. It's fantastic that you've got the match, that the local community has bought into it at the community college or higher ed level. Tell us how you're going to get it built, and tell us how you're going to take care of it in the long term. I just think it's a discussion we should again have.
Excellent point. Excellent.
Two things very quickly. Number one is I look forward to the commercial and Representative Hanna's next campaign where he says, I spent a great deal of time in the Oregon correctional system. Secondly, so in terms of deferred maintenance, Mr. Chancellor, are you telling us that it's difficult to excite people and sell them, for example, the Kurt Schrader HVAC system? We can't raise money like that?
Co-Chair Nolan, Representative Galizio, we have found it very difficult to raise money to deal with
the mechanical electrical contractors. I think they're all over that. they're all people, Chancellor, that's all.
Well, that could be, but we have had difficulty in the past.
Madam Chair, I just was going to give him one exception because I know it's two or three bienniums down the list. I think D.D. Hall you could raise money for.
Perhaps so. It sounds to me like you've got lots of volunteer fundraisers who you ought to sign up here. The hour is late, and I will not drag this out, but I do want to expressly thank the Chancellor and the Executive Branch for hanging in there with us as we really tried to find common ground and a capacity to provide as much support for capital construction and capital reconstruction in the university system as we think is prudent, and also to establish a good habit for the legislature, not just of being fiscally prudent, but of investing in our higher education system. With that, I'll take a motion.
Figure some additional
rules. Oh, more? Yes.
Please excuse me, Madam Chair. I would ask that the form of the motion that is offered in order to put on the record, since you don't have an LC draft, take the form of the following, that you approve the capital construction projects and their funding as in for the Department of Higher Education as indicated on page 1, for community colleges as indicated on page 3, and approve the additional recommendations on page 4. We have not really talked about those, but these typically refer to changes in authority for previously approved projects that will not, in these cases, have additional costs to the general or lottery fund, and also a deletion of some language that was added on debt capacity.
Madam Chair.
Senator Schrader.
I'd like to move that we amend Senate Bill 5516 to the Capital Construction and Funding Department of Higher Ed as indicated on page 2 of the 62207 LFO, page 1, excuse me, of the 62207 LFO handout, community colleges as shown on page 3 of that handout, and approve the additional LFO recommendations on page 4 of that handout.
Senator Schrader recommends a conceptual amendment to Senate Bill 5516, which would incorporate the capital construction projects for the Department of Higher Education as outlined on page 1, recommended capital construction projects for community colleges as outlined on page 3, and additional LFO recommendations for Senate Bill 5516 as detailed on page 4. Is there discussion on that motion? Are there objections? Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move Senate Bill 5516 as amended by this committee to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Schrader recommends Senate Bill 5516 as amended with that conceptual amendment be moved to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, thank you all for good work. Motion carries. Finally, carriers. Representative Galizio will carry to the full and to the House floor. Senator Devlin will carry to the Senate floor. Good evening, Mr. Rocco.
Good evening.
Thank you. Senate bill, one more, folks, and then it's bedtime for me.
This is Mr. Negative here.
Senate bill 5548, continuing resolution. Mr. Rocco, when you get a moment.
Madam Chair, I think this is superfluous. I'm not sure why we're still spending time.
That's true. We'll be done by... When will we be done? Sunday?
Do
Monday?
Do you want to talk rule suspension?
Yeah. Now that you're tired, cranky.
Yeah. Bugging me like this.
Mr. Ruffler, entertain us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 5548 is, you have the dash two amendments before you that that replace the 5548 original bill. These are standard language that we use every session to provide a continuing resolution that would allow ongoing expenditure authority for state agencies that don't have an adopted budget for the 07-09 biennium by July 1st, 2007. And this in no way means that we intend to stay here.
Thank you.
Sure. It's just sort of a safety valve because if a bill is passed on June 29th, there is a process to get it enrolled, signed by the president and speaker, and then sent to the governor. And if the governor does not sign this bill by July 1st, agencies do not have the ability to spend money for the biennium, so they would theoretically have to close down. So this bill gives them the authority to continue to spend at the same level as the last quarter of the current biennium until their budget bill is actually signed by the governor.
Thank you, Mr. Rocco. Any discussion questions? Senator Schrader?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 5548.
Senator Schrader moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 5548. Discussion? Any objections?
I'd like to move the Senate Bill 5548 as amended to the full committee with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Schrader moves Senate Bill 5548 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Senator Devlin, would you like to carry this to the floor and the floor?
Yes, Madam Chair. I think by our next regular biennial session, there'll be confidence in us that we can get out in time.
Excellent. And
I'll take that bet. Where does that come from?
No. either of you interested in carrying this on the floor? Representative Hannah will carry on the House floor. There being no further business, thank you all for hanging in there. We're adjourned. Yeah.